Tonight, I want to talk a little bit about a koan from a collection called The Iron Flute. Koans are the traditional teaching stories of the Zen tradition. The Iron Flute is a collection that we don't study formally as part of our koan curriculum, but it is nonetheless a really kind of enjoyable and fun collection that I commend to you guys. The phrase iron flute is actually it's a term for it's a shortened form of the iron flute with no holes. And playing on the iron flute with no holes is a description for what this endeavor of Zazen is. And the case that I want to read tonight is case one. This one features the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha, and Manjushri. Manjushri is the cosmic embodiment of transcendent wisdom. He wields the flaming sword of prajna, which in killing ignorance gives life to freedom. Manjushri guards, in the words of John Tarrant, he guards the palace of emptiness, the palace of wisdom. And Manjushri, whenever he appears in the Zen koan literature, is always getting something a little bit wrong. Case one. One day, Manjushri stood outside the gate to the monastery. When Buddha called to him, "Manjushri, Manjushri, why do you not enter?" "I do not see a thing outside the gate. Why should I enter?" Manjushri answered. This is, so he doesn't get it entirely wrong. This is very important. He's making a really important point. This Manjushri is standing at the threshold of the Zen temple, standing at the threshold of the monastery, of the Zendo, the practice hall. And Buddha says, "Why don't you come in?" And he says, quite rightly, that there is no thing outside the gate. There is no, there is nothing outside of right here. There is nothing, there is nowhere to go to. There is no practice that needs to be done to, no special form of practice that is in another category than the complete undifferentiated whole that is Manjushri's life, that is each of our life. So, Manjushri is pointing out that in an important way, Zazen is not a special class of activity distinct by nature from the rest of the activities of our lives, from the entanglements and difficulties of meeting our family, coming together with our families for the holidays, from the stresses of work, from interpersonal challenges, from practicing with ourselves in all of our messiness. Zazen is not something separate from that. Zazen is in fact the exact same as that. In Zazen, we are noticing when our minds get hooked, as they inevitably always do, on the energies of grasping aversions and the stories we tell ourselves. And Zazen is a place that we practice that gesture of unhooking and reorienting to being the person we mean to be, to acting in this moment with as much wisdom, kindness, and humanity as we can. That, and in the context of Zazen, We do that by meeting this moment just as it is, which is exactly what we do elsewhere in our life. Zazen is the stripped down version. It's a place that we can practice over and over again just this little part, just this little gesture of unhooking and returning, so that we have that skill that sets into us at the level of the skin cells, at the level of the eyeballs, at the level of our broke open heart. It penetrates so deeply that in all of the more complex situations of our life, we can still count on it. We can still bring forth that wisdom that recognizes reactions as reactions, feelings as feelings, stories as stories. And cutting through that by recognizing just it as it is, we are able to cut through it and find the freedom to, even for a microsecond, reorient to being the person we mean to be. But if we're leaving our practice on the cushion when we get up, then what good is that? If practicing with our minds and our hearts and our lives, if recognizing phenomena as they are, seeing things as they are, receiving this moment and ourselves as we are, if that is something that only takes place when we put our butts on a special pillow, that is a problem. And often one of the things that I did for many years with my teacher James, and that I experience a lot of people doing in Dokusan, is they come to me and they want to confess about how little they practice. I haven't practiced at all. And often what people are meaning is that they haven't put their butt on a cushion to do some zazen, and they call that practice. But that's too small a definition of practice. And I'm continually encouraging people to widen that out. Zazen on a cushion is a support. It is a training. It is something useful and worth doing. But practice, real practice, the important part of practice, can take place anywhere, in any moment of your life, in any relationship in your life, in any mind state or emotional state or messiness of circumstance that arises in your life. There's always the opportunity for practice. But the caveat is that we can only do what we can do when we can do it. Not more than we can do and not before we can do it. So it is the case that sometimes we get caught up in our reactivity, and we just kind of get carried along by the by karmic conditioning, by the conditioning of the way we use our minds, by the winds of circumstance, and we find ourselves reacting unskillfully, unkindly. We find ourselves attaching on to our stories, being certain we're right, being certain that person is wrong. We find ourselves holding on to the parts of life we like and pushing away the parts we don't. And because that happens, we conclude that we must be a failure at Zen practice, life, humanity. And so when we notice in our life, oh, there was that moment yesterday, that thing that I did with my family when I was there last week, that went really badly. You see, so that proves that I can't practice my life. But the reality is that thing about your parent, the messiness with your family last week, that is arising right here, right now, in this moment. And this is the opportunity that you can be free from that. And so the very act of the very moment, the very action of seeing how caught up you've been, rather than seeing that as proof and affirmation of failure. That is actually like a world-filling bell of mindfulness, the same one that calls us into the beginning of each period of zazen. And that very feeling of, oh, that was such a problem before, to let that, we can cultivate a response to let that be the, oh, right, there's right now. Here is the moment. Here is the place I can practice. Manjushri stands outside the gate and says, there is nothing. I see nothing outside the gate. Why should I enter? And it's true. There is nothing outside the gate. There is nothing outside our lives. And Manjushri is also pointing to the reality that all things, all experiences, phenomena, people, things lack a permanent, fixed, unchanging essence. And thus, all things are, in Buddhist terminology, empty. Or all things are without self. Or all things are continually changing. These are all other reads of I see nothing outside the gate. And that's true. See, those are all frames of the absolute. They are all frames of the Dharma body of the Buddha. They are all frames of the essential oneness of all things. And the other side of the absolute is the relative, is the specificity, is the world of people and families, the world of relationships, the world of responsibilities, the whole world of this and that. That's the realm of differentiation, the realm of the relative, the realm of multiplicity. So there is the absolute, and that is real and true and really, really there. And at the same time, even though everything is one, everything is many, at the same time, the relative and the absolute are both true. And the great gift of this practice of Zen is that we don't have to pick one over the other. We don't have to privilege the absolute over the relative. It is not the case that the absolute is what good Zen students see and the relative is for chumps. Both are always true, and each is only ever half. And the practice of Zazen is to be able to meet both of them as they are. And as the Heart Sutra tells us, form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness is exactly form. And it is often the case that meditation kind of is an initiatory experience in that when you start to go really deeply into the practice of meditation, or if you sit a lengthy meditation retreat, there is the possibility of an experience arising that seems for all the world like a direct experience of oneness, of non-differentiation, of the absolute. But that is actually just a pretty... is just a specific and unusual, but still just a pretty basic standard experience of the relative arising. It's an experience of the relative that feels spaciousness, that feels spacious, expansive, non-differentiated. But that is just the feeling. And there's a tendency that we, because that experience is by and large only accessible after a whole bunch of meditation, we think that it is therefore the goal of meditation. But it's not. It really is just a side effect. And there's a tendency to grab onto it, to pursue it, and to measure your success at Zazen of whether or not you're having this one experience. And that thereby pushes away all the other experiences, all of the other ample and rich opportunities that your life and mine, just as it is, really is overflowing with, really is presenting you right now. But in reality, we don't need special experiences to find the absolute. Form is exactly emptiness. The absolute is exactly the relative. The relative exactly the absolute. There is no other, there is no absolute outside the relative. There is no emptiness outside form. And it's so easy to make emptiness or the absolute into to harden it, to reify it, to make it concrete and unchanging. And the metaphor for this in Zen is capturing the spring breeze in a bottle, putting a stopper on it. It's true, the spring breeze is very real. You can go out there and you can feel it. But when you catch it up and put it in the bottle, what you have is not the spring breeze. So the caution that Manjushri is generously embodying for us is... to not get stuck and limited to the special forms of practice, to not get caught by thinking that practice is what takes place only in a meditation hall, only in a retreat, only in a temple, but to really enter the dojo, the training hall of your whole life, and do spend some time on the cushion. Because this practice, this working with our mind around this one simple gesture of unhooking and returning, is worth doing. And this is the same kind of paradox. It is the case, just like with the absolute and the relative, it is the case that practice isn't special and that there's something that we're practicing. It's the case that everything is perfect just as it is and there's something worth doing. Manjushri, statue of Manjushri is usually flanking in temples, the Buddha in the Buddha hall, there's the Buddha, and to one side is Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, and to the other side is Samantabhadra, the Bodhisattva of compassionate action in the world. when Samantha Bhadra and Manjushri is often pictured astride a sitting lion, and Samantha Bhadra is usually pictured riding an elephant, and so Samantha Bhadra, the bodhisattva of embodied wisdom, enacted wisdom, compassionate activity, doesn't stop at that threshold. Goes right on in and does what needs doing. So, notice these thresholds in your life. Notice the places where you're saying, I can't go in there. I don't need to go in there. Or the places where you're saying, the thing that I really need is across that threshold. I need to go get that. Notice those. See them with the eyes of Manjushri. And then get in there and take action, like Samantha Bhadra. Thank you, guys. So we'll open up the space for questions or comments or observations about thresholds and stuff in your lives, or perhaps we'll just sit silent. But if you feel moved to say something, do please share. Oh, did you have something? Was there an intake of breath?
I was thinking to myself, I wasn't. I was thinking that, and also, I have the experience also of getting. So it's the same thing, but it's kind of like the mirror image of it, which is a threshold that I've been afraid to hear one way or another.
Right. And so honoring the reality of the forms that are arising, honoring the reality of the experience of trepidation or fear, and not trying to create an experience in which you're not having those because you're in some palace of emptiness. But with all of those things arising, with the full measure of our specific humanity in you know, full bloom, to bring all that in. Yeah. Thank you. All right, let's wrap up with the four bodhisattva vows.